WrestleSpective Radio is not affiliated with World Wrestling Entertainment, TNA Wrestling, Ring of Honor Wrestling, or any other sports entertainment entity or personality.
You're listening to WrestleSpective Radio. Learn to love it.
WrestleSpective Radio at FairToFlare.com. I'm Jason Mann, and we are beginning our SummerSlam main event series, starting with SummerSlam 89, Hulk Hogan and Brutus Beefcake against Macho Man Randy Savage and Zeus. My guest today is Mr. Glamazon David Buckler. He is a host and writer at DivaDirt.com, and he's also been a contributor to Fair to Flare. David, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
No problem, and thanks for being on. And this is a pretty interesting first main event to talk about, kind of very similar to the idea of the SummerSlam 88 main event of Hogan Savage against Andre and DiBiase, sort of kind of the, you know, preparing the two off, although I would say this is a inferior combination to the 88 show. But this match, I think it comes off actually pretty well, especially despite Zeus's limitations.
I think you're right, and I think a lot of that has to do with how great a performer Randy Savage is, and his partnership with Sherry really worked. And I thought that, you know, we really saw that here in the main event. You're right, Zeus is very limited. I think Brutus Beefcake is very limited. And, you know, and Hogan kind of does what he always does. But I enjoyed the match because Randy and Sherry are always entertaining together.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to disagree with you a little bit on Beefcake. I think Beefcake had kind of come into his own here. I mean, I'm not saying that Beefcake was like the best in the world by any means, but I thought he was pretty good. I think that during this time he had developed, you know, a fairly good style, you know, and he, you know, he understood his limitations as well, but I thought he, you know, his bumping was pretty good. I thought, you know, his offense looked pretty good. I always enjoyed his knee lift in particular. I thought he just really, you know, had some pretty good offense here, especially obviously against Savage. And you know, you're working with somebody like Randy Savage who can make anyone look good. But I, you know, a lot of people have this really horrible opinion of Brutus Beefcake. And, you know, there are definitely times in his career where he was really bad, but I think kind of the 87 to 90 period, for the most part, he was actually pretty good.
Yeah, I will agree with you on that, in that as a wrestler, I think he was fine. I think he kind of personifies the, you know, the marketing Vince McMahon cartoon era. And, you know, you get kind of wrapped up in the barber gimmick with the shears and all that kind of goofy stuff. But you're right. I have no problem with him as a wrestler. I thought he was fine. And you're right. I think he was fine in this match. It just sometimes, you know, the whole hair cutting, strutting and cutting kind of stuff kind of detracts from me a little bit.
Right. He was definitely a cartoon. And they were really, I think, in 89, really moving to make everyone a cartoon. And I think that's kind of one of the things in this era that I sort of started to be not as into WWE kind of 89, where I was still watching, but I was getting a little bit older, wasn't watching quite as regularly. Sort of, I think that's one of the things, like everyone, you know, was at this point, everyone was really jacked up. Everyone was a cartoon or kind of a silly character, or at least becoming so. And it felt, you know, you can certainly have cartoons in wrestling and have those great characters, but maybe not everyone should fit that mold.
That's right. That's right. I agree with that. And that detracted a little bit, you know, for me with Brutus Beefcake. But I agree with you. As a wrestler, I thought he was fine. And I thought he kind of knew his place in this match. You know, he wasn't there to overshadow Hogan and Savage, which really was still the central feud of the WWF at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and this was basically the end of a stage of that. They kind of revisited it again. They did a Saturday Night's Main Event right before WrestleMania 6. But basically, yeah, this was kind of the pretty much the end of that. So they after the good guys come out, we have We've got Hogan talks to Howard Finkel, makes an announcement, and then Elizabeth comes out to a giant reaction to come out and join the good guys. And Tony Schiavone here in commentary had a lot of enthusiasm, I will say. And Tony Schiavone is another guy who has sort of been maligned, and I think rightfully so, for a lot of his work during the Nitro era. But you know, in this time, you know, talk about Tony Schiavone in the 80s and early 90s. I really enjoy his work for the most part.
Yeah, I thought he was fine. I thought he and Jesse were good together. I mean, as a nostalgia factor, I, you know, of course, love Vince McMahon and Gorilla Monsoon and some of those other commentators, the WWE, even, you know, Lord Alfred Hayes, I thought was kind of good. But Schiavone was fine. And I thought he sold the action throughout the whole match and had a good rub with Jesse. To me, Jesse Ventura, though, will never be topped.
No, I agree. I think Jesse and is perfect and complimented almost everyone he worked with, you know, excellently.
Right.
I like the I like Tony's saying she's not scared, Jesse, of Elizabeth, you know, being not being scared of Scary Sherry, as they were calling her at this point. This is just before Savage and Sherry become king and queen of WWE. So and Savage is still rocking the trunks and the boots. He hadn't gone to long tights yet. And I love the white trunks with black stars combo he has here. That's one of my favorite variations that he would have.
Yeah, he looked magnificent. And I made a note here when I was watching the match that I really loved him in these robes and, like you said, with the shorts. When he moved into the whole Macho King, I thought that was okay for a while. And then it got really silly towards the end with all the, like, the rainbow colors and the fringes and everything. He still looked great here. I just can't believe how fast he is in the ring, too. When I go back and watch him in these matches from the late 80s, his speed is just remarkable. That, you go back to Ricky Steamboat in WrestleMania 3, just the speed with which he moved around the ring was remarkable. And I thought it was interesting how Sherry kind of started to steal Liz's spot in WWF at this time, because Liz was for so long, you know, the only female really to be in that main event picture, and Sherry was excellent, I thought, in this match, you know, there with Savage and Zeus, did her job well, and throughout the next couple years, I thought she became the predominant female in the company.
Yeah, you know, without a doubt, and I liked how they, you know, and I doubt this was the plan at this point, but I like how they plant the seeds of the tension between Elizabeth and Sherry that, of course, you know, ended up being the, you know, big in the WrestleMania 7, you know, the major angle when Elizabeth saves Savage from Sherry. And then, you know, of course, leading to their reunion. So that's kind of a, you know, cool thing to watch here, you know, definitely starting. But
and it really did refresh Randy's character, I thought, you know, to have Sherry with him and give him kind of some new storylines and you know, impact in his interviews and everything. So I thought it was a great combination.
Yeah, I didn't really like it as much in the time, and I just think it's because I love Savage so much and wanted him to be a good guy. But looking back on it, I very much appreciate it. And I agree with you on the Savage's outfits. I think it did. They did kind of, especially when he turned good again and was like the 92 to 93, 94 era stuff. He had some pretty gaudy, you know, with the cowboy hats and stuff. But but yeah, the classic Randy Savage. He never had a bad outfit as far as I'm concerned. But and yeah, Sherry definitely really amped it up and really I know there's this kind of famous insane YouTube video with I think it's just before the big cage match that they did. They did a I think the No Holds Barred, the movie, and the cage match, which happened around Survivor Series or maybe after Survivor Series. And it's basically Savage, Zeus, and Sherry just cutting like the most insane promo that you will ever see in your life. I mean, you got to check it out on YouTube if you've never seen it, because it's pretty awesome. It's great stuff. So the match itself kind of starts off with everyone just sort of going at it. Hogan keeps going after Zeus, but he cannot hurt Zeus at all. He does a little bit of an eye rake and then tries a body slam, but then Zeus chokes him out. Beefcake, meanwhile, he's able to fend off Savage, dump him outside, and then he tries to break it up by jumping off the top rope, but Zeus catches him. And Zeus immediately pretty much shows how amazingly stiff and awkward he is. But he keeps it very, very simple. Basically, mostly chokes and bear hugs. You know, that doesn't work a lot of offense, and I can definitely appreciate how they built this match around his limitations and did very little with him. But even in 1989, I could tell that Zeus was terrible. I mean, there was no doubt about that. I mean, you know, he was big and impressive, but he just, you know, he was just awful. He really was.
Well, it was a bear hug clinic, wasn't it?
I mean, it was.
One bear hug to the next. And yet, the funny thing was, you put someone in a bear hug and they wouldn't tap out to it. It was big bear hug after bear hug. And like you said, you know, a lot of chokeholds. But they did manage the match correctly in having Macho do most of the work, right?
Yes.
And he is so brilliant that I enjoyed the match. And, I think what hurt me at the time as a fan was we had seen this formula before with Hogan, where he can't hurt this guy, whoever this guy was.
Sure.
And then he hurts this guy and he beats this guy. So, you know, the whole monster angle, you know, had kind of been run into the ground with Hogan as champion. Savage was really, in my opinion, one of the first guys to kind of deviate from that, where Hogan had to face a guy who was as fast and, you know, faster or a better wrestler, a high flyer. And that made for some interesting matches. Zeus, you know, standing in the middle of the ring, pounding his chest and screaming, it just didn't get me that excited because I just felt like, well, Hogan will find a way to beat this guy. Okay, it was, you know, interesting coming off the movie how they kind of fed into it. I think the big mistake they made is that they didn't really build Zeus up on television as a wrestler at all. Now, I understand what you're saying, Jason, that he's limited, but they didn't even put him in a squash match or anything. You know, I mean, to my recollection, he never actually won a WWF match. Is that correct?
I believe you're correct. Yeah, I think he just wrestled. I mean, the three matches: SummerSlam, Survivor Series, and then the cage match that went along with the movie pay per view. I think that's it. I mean, I could be wrong about that too, but I don't remember ever seeing him. And yeah, he was never on TV wrestling squash matches. And I guess the idea is they didn't want to expose him and show how bad he was. But that's the only reason I can think of.
Yeah, but you could have had Terry Gibbs jump into his arm and, you know, tap out in 2 minutes, you know.
Yeah, you could have done like something. Yeah, you know, maybe they had other reasons for that as well, but maybe they figured just exposing him, maybe just they wanted to have him be a special thing, and if they put him on TV, that would, you know, reduce the aura. That's the only guess I can kind of have, but
Right. Remember they billed him as the human wrecking machine?
Yes.
And I think the match would have been more intense for me had we seen some human wrecking at some point.
That's true, yes.
You know what I mean?
That's a very good point. Yeah, that is a very good point. Maybe that would have been, you know, in my mind too at the time of, you know, not having had seen him. Yeah, it just sort of you're taking somebody's word, but he's not really showing it, you know. And yeah, eventually, you know, Savage comes in. He works a sleeper on Hogan for a while, who fades. But Tony does believe deeply in the power of the Hulkamaniacs, so he feels that Hogan is going to come back, and indeed he's right. Hogan elbows it out of it, and then shoulder blocks him down. But Zeus does get a bit a boot to the back and comes in, and then we have the bear hug. And this is after Savage sort of whispers into his ear, presumably communicating an Irish whip spot into the bear hug. So they're definitely keeping it simple. And Hogan even fades for a while, then goes down to a knee, and then even is laying down. So there's a couple of two counts off the bear hug, which I don't know if I've ever call seeing, but worked just fine. I like Jesse, of course, always tremendously entertaining, and I enjoyed particularly his suggestions that Elizabeth was going to, if Macho Man and Zeus ended up winning this match, that Elizabeth would would join them afterwards, being the gold digger that she is.
Yeah, and that was something that, if you remember, with Miss Elizabeth, was always kind of the issue. She would go with Honky Tonk Man if he won, right? Because she really wanted him, and so they were always playing up her allegiance, that she would always go with the winner. And Jesse's just brilliant as always. One thing I liked about Macho and Zeus together, you mentioned how he whispered in his ear, and he did that quite a bit in this match. It was almost like he was trying to handle him. Because remember how he would tag it out? He would kind of slap Zeus's chest. you know, it's like he understood that Zeus was kind of a monster, and you know, he had to kind of play that where, like, you know, hang on there, buddy, you know, listen to me, and we'll win this match. I liked how he kind of took the leader role for the team, and that worked for me, because you're figuring, well, Zeus doesn't really know what he's doing, you know, he's just a big, tough guy, so that made sense.
Yeah, that's a good observation. I agree. There was a lot of that. Although it is funny that Macho Man Randy Savage is being the voice of reason. But
yes, it is.
But yes, you're absolutely right. Yeah, he was able to calm down, and I think that kind of made Zeus seem a little bit more unstable and more dangerous. That kind of worked for that character. But Eventually we have, yeah, so sort of Zeus and Savage going back and forth. Savage is some of his typical stuff, dropping Hogan's throat onto the top rope, antagonizes Beefcake for a bit. Then Hogan's able to get the advantage when Savage misses what I always call the boss man straddle, jumping onto the second rope as Hogan was there, but Hogan wasn't there. Beefcake comes in, gets a bit of offense, gets a clothesline and the big knee lift, locks in the sleeper, and then Savage is stuck in it for a while, but he's able to smartly pull Beefcake forward and knocks him into the turnbuckle. Then Zeus actually is able to get an eye rake and jumps into a sleeper. And then Savage able to grab Sherry's purse and nail him. And Beefcake goes out like a light. And Tony comes to the conclusion that there's got to be something in that purse. And then Savage is slow to cover. And then Hogan sort of pulls him off again and again. And I like this part where Hogan sort of chases Savage outside. Macho even goes after Liz. Then Hogan throws Savage back in, but then he has to be able to break out the count again because Beefcake is still out. So it's like a minute-long segment, but I kind of liked the Hogan having to try to protect Beefcake in there by, you know, minimal interference, but still kind of interference.
And it does cover up again what we've talked about here with Zeus's limitations. I agree. This was a good spot, and it kind of added length to the match and some story to the match. You know, what's in the purse? Beefcake's out. Are they going to get a cheap victory? They needed to find something other than Zeus in the ring doing wrestling moves.
Yeah.
And I think they did. And it was like you said, it kind of put Hogan in a new role also with him chasing around the outside. So I thought it was good, and it set up then, of course, what we saw later on with the purse.
Yeah, yeah. So Zeus tags in, and then he works over Beefcake for a while, again, chokes and more chokes, and he does get one offensive move where he drops Beefcake's throat onto the ropes. And then we get Savage in, and they get a really hard double clothesline spot, and the fans are insanely hot for this tag attempt. Beefcake is sort of able to kick off Savage and tag, and then Hogan destroys Savage and boots him out of the ring, and he tries a suplex in, but Sherry is able to pull the legs a la the Warrior Rude spot from WrestleMania 5.
Right.
Hogan's able to kick out, but Savage does clothesline him down. He tags Zeus, although Zeus does not come in for quite a long time. Savage does the flying elbow first, and then Hogan no-sells it, and then Hogan atomic drop Savage out, and then Zeus politely waits and then does come in. So now we've got our big confrontation, and Hogan is able to stagger Zeus with some punches. He tries the clothesline, and then Zeus sort of wobbles and goes to a knee. And it is not the best action you'll ever see, but honestly, the fans are going insane for this. I mean, they were really, for whatever reason, they were invested in this storyline, even if we weren't quite as much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were more invested in this than they were in the movie, that's for sure, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I just started laughing when I watched this. And not because the action was so bad, but, you know, you can't hurt Zeus. You can't hurt Zeus. You can't hurt – well, I guess you can hurt Zeus. I mean, all right, two punches and a clothesline, and he's down on one knee. I mean, I don't understand all of a sudden why we get this big one-on-one confrontation, and Hogan was able to hurt him now. Now, you say, well, the match has gone on for a bit here, and he's tired or whatever. But it's like they kept telling us he's this human wrecking machine, building him up. And then Hogan kind of used his normal punch-punch clothesline routine, and Zeus was down on one knee. But you're absolutely right, man. The crowd was going crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, and then we have Elizabeth tripping up Sherry as she tries to go in and getting involved, and then Savage going to the top, but Beefcake pushes him off. And in the meantime, all the ref's attention is elsewhere, and Hogan gets the purse, nails Zeus in the head, and then does the body slam and leg drop for the win. And Sherry sort of tries to interfere, but she's stopped cold by Hogan. And then Hogan nails her with the atomic drop while Jesse is going crazy about Hogan beating up a woman. Elizabeth slaps her down, and then Beefcake ends up cutting Sherry's ponytail. As again, everyone is going crazy, and Jesse Ventura is cannot believe the villainy that these so-called heroes are showing right here.
Right. And I wrote a quote down here from Jesse that I just love. He said, "Hogan had to use an illegal foreign object to win this match. And if that's what the Hulkamaniacs advocate, well, they can stick it." Love, he's just the best.
Yes.
He's just the best. But, you know, the finish of the match, the 1-2-3 on Zeus after the leg drop, I thought was kind of formulaic at that point, and that was basically the end of Zeus. I mean,
yeah,
you know, he had a few more spots in the ring, like you mentioned, but. And that pretty much did it for his character, his, you know, supposed dominance. But when you throw in Sherry and Savage and Jesse on commentary, I thought the ending here was exciting. You see the crowd go crazy. It was kind of the Vince McMahon WWF formula at the time, right?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And it felt like the formula. I mean, it was definitely, like I said, you know, it was sort of recycling 88, but to less effect.
Yeah.
I think when they, you know, when they kind of went, started going to singles matches for the most part on SummerSlam, I think that was definitely a better thing. That was definitely a more enjoyable thing. You know, the tag matches are nice for, you know, a little bit of variety every once in a while, but it definitely, you know, wasn't as good. Yeah, looking at, I was just checking to see if Zeus, you know, was involved in any matches in WWF in '89, and it does not look like he was. He had some run-ins and that sort of thing, but he was didn't actually wrestle other than the matches that we talked about pretty much. So.
Right, and that's what made, I thought, the Hogan-Andre dynamic so fantastic for WrestleMania 3, because Andre, of course, had many years of you know, being a star and winning and, you know, that body of work. He said, this guy can really beat Hogan. You know, he didn't have to come out with crazy costumes on or scream all the time. He had that legitimacy, if you will.
Right, right. And obviously Andre, despite his massive limitations, understood how to present himself and understood, you know, just how to make himself look bad. I mean, he had his moments where he could look awkward, particularly late in his career, but he was just so tremendous in his movements and everything that, you know, he was obviously fantastic.
And I want to comment on what you said about, you know, the formula at the time that WWF was using and then going to the singles matches. I think that's why people remember WrestleMania 6 so much with Hogan and Warrior, because Hogan lost. And even though, you know, he was in the ring at the end and congratulated Warrior or whatever, that was the first time I remember kind of stepping back thinking, wow, that's not what I expected from Hogan.
Yeah,
You know,
right, exactly.
He didn't win this time, you know, and I think that's what hurt a little bit here in retrospect, SummerSlam 89. Like, it kind of felt like you knew Hogan and Beefcake were going to win, because that's kind of what Hogan always did at that time.
Yeah. I think we're entering the point where Hogan's, you know, stuff is starting to sort of feel tired and feel a little bit, you know, it's
Yep.
not, I mean, it certainly worked and it certainly was still a success, but it was starting, you know, to me really to feel, you know, like you said, like a formula. So that was, it was good when they did when they had Warrior win the match to kind of shake it up, even if Warrior as champion wasn't, you know, a huge success. But yeah, it definitely was a pretty exciting, you know, despite the limitations, I still think this was a fun match. Clearly, the crowd, you know, loved every minute of it. So they were, the fans that they were there, they certainly were working for. And yeah, it was good times.
This match, yeah, it was fun, and it really, to me, you could say is a real shining example of the product of WWF at the time. A lot of character, right? Not great, you know, chain wrestling.
No.
Much more storyline, much more theme like that, you know, built around a couple guys that could really work. But this had a lot of Vince McMahon gloss all over it.
Yeah, it definitely did. And this is the, you know, the card here is sort of interesting. The one, there's actually some really, well, there was some really good wrestling in the undercard. There's Brain Busters, a Heart Foundation tag team match that's really excellent.
Loved
it. Another Rick Martel and Fabulous Rougeau Brothers against Tito Santana and the Rockers. Really, you know, so, you know, a couple of really fun matches. Also an Ultimate Warrior Rick Rude Intercontinental title match that Rude really makes a great effort for Warrior, probably Warrior's first, you know, even decent match. And a match that I enjoyed, even if it wasn't really technically good, a Jim Duggan and Demolition against Andre the Giant and the Twin Towers.
Well, you're a Demolition guy, right?
Oh, I am an absolutely Demolition guy.
Yeah, no, that was a fun match. I thought, like you said, I thought the Heart Foundation Brain Busters tag team match was just a clinic. You know, just a classic tag team styles. Loved it, loved it, loved it. Great opener to the show. And I like that six person tag match. Boy, Rick Martel was big at that time.
Oh yeah. Everyone in that match really clicks really well. That's one of my. It's sort of in one of my favorite underrated gems. That six man. Yeah. That's really good stuff. And they really played the Santana Martel feud, which at the time I was very sad about, but looking back on was actually pretty fantastic. So.
I had forgotten the Intercontinental title match and how it all played out with Rude and Warrior, and I really liked it. I liked that much more than I remember liking it at the time. But I think to your point, I mean, Rick Rude really, you know, makes that match. I mean, Warrior always had his limitations, but you know, Heenan, whenever he's involved, you know, it just feels important. And that was a good part of the undercard.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is definitely a show worth checking out if you've never seen it. There's some not great stuff too, but there's definitely enough on it that's really great and probably better than WWE was generally doing at the time. So that's definitely worth checking out.
Well, you know, lastly, also it was basically the coming out party for Mr. Perfect too. You know, I mean, hopefully we can all forget the Red Rooster, but. Mr. Perfect got a nice win on this show, coming off WrestleMania 5 where he did as well. But this kind of felt like where he was really now going to be into that, you know, Intercontinental title picture, and they were starting to make a big deal of him.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. David, why don't you tell everyone a little bit about Diva Dirt and any plugs you want to give?
Sure. So, yeah, I'm a writer at DivaDirt.com, and basically the predominant news source for women's professional wrestling. So if you like it, check it out. I write a column on there called Hitting the Ropes, and you can catch me on Twitter, DLB19338. So if you're not following me, please do.
All right, and thanks again. And everyone, of course, check out WrestleSpective.com and FairToFlare.com. And we're going to be continuing with a SummerSlam main event podcast every day until the main event, until the show coming soon. So keep checking us out for more SummerSlam main event podcasts. And keep on listening, and thanks again.
Let's be honest. Most wrestling websites suck. BS rumors, schoolyard gossip, plagiarism. It's no wonder why no one believes anything they read on the internet. Well, if you can't get something done right, you might as well do it yourself. Presenting the Fair to Flare Quarterly from the writers of FairToFlare.com and over a dozen other wrestling websites. We're not copy and pasting what we read in some newsletter. This is 100% original content from the best wrestling bloggers on the internet. In-depth analysis of the art of pro wrestling, debate, artwork, and humor. The Fair to Flare Quarterly will raise the bar of what wrestling journalism can and should be. Professionally edited and produced, and every contributor will be paid for their work. Order your copy of the Fair to Flare Quarterly today at FairToFlare.com. The better wrestling media has arrived.